Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, it's Florida week, and it doesn't feel like there's a ton of excitement for Florida week. And what's your assessment on the feeling of the fan base right now as Tennessee heads into what is officially billed a rivalry game, but hasn't really felt like much of one?
There's still some things I think Tennessee could be hopeful of, a chance to beat a top 10 team, a chance to end a five-game winning streak. So I'm sure some fans are really encouraged by that and looking forward to a chance to really make a statement that says, hey, we're not that bad.
And maybe closing the gap with Florida, because we've already – Pruitt has already said that they've closed the gap with Alabama despite that 31-point loss. So I think it would be – it would really show a lot if they could not only close the gap with Alabama this year, but also close the gap with Florida.
Yeah, also, I think Florida's all about its passing game. That's it. Defense is mediocre. Running game's pedestrian. It's all about the passing game. How sharp can they be against Tennessee? They're going to be so overconfident when they go out there. Kyle Pitts probably thinks he will score every time he touches the ball.
And he might.
Well, I'm trying to have a glasses half full conversation here on this end. Remember, it was just last week, I think, we gave reasons why Tennessee might keep Jeremy Pruitt as its coach, and we had a huge response to that. I think people were so like, oh, my God, they can find a reason where they might keep Jeremy Pruitt?
Not only one, we came up with, I think, four or five.
Yeah, a lot of them weren't very good, but we still came up with them. I think that was important. So, yeah, it's Florida week, and that's kind of like route week. It's kind of like, Tennessee just hadn't been coming close to Florida the last 2 years. And this kind of has the feel of the old Urban Meyer's back in charge days, where you just don't give Tennessee much chance. And Tennessee was at its peak when Steve Spurrier was beating up on it. But you still gave Tennessee a chance because they had great teams too. But, it's another – you got Dan Mullen now, another offensive coach.
Yeah, speaking of Dan Mullen, John, you wrote a column this week pondering what could have been – for the Vols if they were to hire Dan Mullen in that 2017 coaching search. People remember that John Curry tried to hire Greg Schiano, and then, of course, that unraveled, and Tennessee backed away from the deal. Unraveled, maybe, using that term. That might not be a strong enough term for what happened there with Tennessee.
Explosives come to mind.
Yes. Yes. The deal exploded with Greg Schiano. You're right. It's more accurate than unraveled. But Schiano was actually choice 1B for John Curry. Choice 1A, which he had right, I think, was Dan Mullen. John Curry was in hot pursuit of Mullen during that 2017 coaching search, was communicating with his Mullen's agent right there around the Egg Bowl on Thanksgiving. Mullen and Curry exchanged text messages on Saturday after Thanksgiving, and Curry was hoping to talk to Mullen, told him that he hoped he enjoyed the cold ones. Apparently Dan Mullen was enjoying himself a couple beverages there, and I don't know what Dan thought of those cold ones, but he wound up at Florida, not Tennessee, and I don't think that that meeting between Curry and Mullen ever happened. And so, of course, Curry was not able to see his coaching search to the finish line, and Philip Fulmer took over the reins as athletic director and hired Jeremy Pruitt. And it is kind of fascinating to look back on it, John, to think what could have happened if Chip Kelly, which was Florida's first choice, would have taken the Florida job and not the UCLA job. It's possible Tennessee could have landed Dan Mullen.
It is, Blake. It wouldn't be the slam dunk decision that he had with Florida. He'd been to Florida. He'd been to Florida with a couple of national championship teams in which he played a prominent role as an offense coordinator, quarterbacks coach, worked with Tim Tebow. It wouldn't be as enticing. However, I think most people believe, even though Tennessee was at a low ebb at the time and has been for many years now, most people believe that you would take Tennessee over Mississippi State. It would just be the, as they say, the analytics would tell you to take Tennessee over Mississippi State. So let's just say Tennessee does get Dan Mullen at that juncture. I mean, let's face it. I mean, do you really think Tennessee would be 2-5 with Dan Mullen as its coach?
Not a chance. Not a
There's
chance.
I mean, no way.
Dan Mullen's one of the best coaches in college football. And I mean, would they be a top 10, top 5 team like they are, like Florida is right now in year 3 under Mullen? I don't think so. I think it would have taken him longer to make Tennessee into a top 10 program. I think he could have done it. You know, if he could do what he did at Mississippi State, win 10 games in a season at State, I think he could do that at Tennessee. I don't think it would have happened this quickly, but I do think he would have Tennessee established as a top 25 program at this point in his tenure. I mean, you look at it, Florida was coming off a 4-7 season when it hired Mullen. Now, certainly there was a lot of talent on that roster, and Mullen is winning with a lot of that talent. I mean, a lot of these guys he's winning with this year are players he inherited, including his Heisman candidate quarterback, Kyle Trask. But I do think that Mullen would have Tennessee humming along pretty nicely had John Curry been able to make that hire, and John Curry would probably still be the athletic director here. But let's take it back a step further, John, because you and I were talking about this off air the other day. You know, we all know that Mullen was a leading candidate for that 2017 search, and as we've covered, didn't go the way Tennessee would have liked it. But we didn't see his name attached to the 2013 coaching search at Tennessee. Of course, Tennessee hired Butch Jones in that search. They made a move for Charlie Strong, who was Florida's defensive coordinator on staff with Mullen under Urban Meyer, and then Charlie Strong went on to Louisville, and that's where he was when Tennessee pursued him. It couldn't land Charlie Strong, and so it wound up with Butch Jones. But if you actually, and you know, these things, hindsight is always the better viewpoint, I guess. But if you look at where Dan Mullen was at that point in his Mississippi State tenure, he'd had 4 seasons in at State. His record was 29-22, which is no small feat at State. It would only get better. He led State to 3 straight bowl games. That's where he was sitting when Tennessee was in that coaching search and ultimately hired Butch Jones. And so, you know, was that really Dave Hart's grave error there? Was not kicking the tires on Dan Mullen, and Tennessee could have had him years before he went to Florida?
Well, Dave Hart is remembered most for trying to blow up the Lady Vols program. Let's get that lady out of that name, that brand name that's internationally known. That was his most brilliant move. But I don't think he got enough blame for this coaching search the way it turned out. He had a gut feeling that Butch Jones was the right guy. I don't understand exactly why Dan Mullen wasn't on everybody's radar at that point. He was in a Power 5 conference. We didn't call him Power 5 back then, I don't think, did we?
I don't think so.
No, but my point is, what he did, if let's just take the Butch comparison. Butch, he followed Brian Kelly at Central Michigan and won there. He followed Brian Kelly at Cincinnati and won there. Butch didn't build those programs. That was all Brian Kelly. And when Brian Kelly leaves Notre Dame, Butch didn't go follow him in Notre Dame. That trip's over. But I just thought Butch got a little too much credit. He deserved some, but he got a little too much compared to Dan Mullen. I used to hear from people when Mullen was at Florida, before he was hired at Mississippi State, that his personality rubbed some people the wrong way, that he was didn't get along with all the peripheral staff there sometimes. You know how those things can go in the inner workings of an athletic department. Some personalities clash. Some just don't fit in as well. But, man, that's overthinking something. If you're looking for a coach, maybe he didn't get along great with everybody at Mississippi State. But you just look. If you just separate everything else and look at the bottom line, this guy won a bunch of games at Mississippi State. Won more than anybody. Jackie Sherrill was there. He didn't win as much as Dan Mullen did. They've had some good coaches there, but they didn't win like Dan Mullen. And just overlook that about some kind of vague perception of Dan Mullen. There also was the thought that, well, he didn't recruit well enough. His personality won. Well, he got a lot of players at Mississippi State that were good enough to win with. And I heard Larry Templeton, the former AD there, told me once that Dan Mullen, I said, what's his strength? And I thought he would say something about offense. He said, he's the best talent evaluator I've ever been around. And remember, Dak Prescott was being looked at from Houghton, Louisiana. He was a small school. He's being looked at as a tight end, I think, or maybe a DB. That's LSU wasn't recruiting him as a quarterback. But Dan Mullen saw something in him. And now everybody sees something in Dak Prescott.
It's kind of amazing to me that Dan Mullen lasted at Mississippi State 9 years. Lasted meaning that some other program hadn't plucked him off before Florida did. But he was patient. I think he probably could have left for other opportunities, I would think, during that 9 year stretch. But, you know, we've talked about before, and you were hitting on that there earlier. I mean, it really just feels like he'd never quite got the due that he deserved at Mississippi State there. I mean, this is a guy that led State to 8 straight bowl appearances, 3 seasons in the top 25, 10-win season. It's the type of success that State hasn't had before him and hasn't had since him, and probably would be a long time before it does. And you mentioned his track record with quarterbacks, John. I mean, you go back to Tim Tebow when Mullen was the offensive coordinator there at Florida, and then what he did with Dak Prescott at State, and then, you know, now moving forward here to his Florida tenure and molding Kyle Trask into the Heisman Trophy front runner. It really just kind of shows you, you know, all those criticisms you were talking about that you kind of hear about Mullen of, is he the most active recruiter? He can have a prickly personality sometimes. If you know how to recruit and develop quarterbacks, boy, that takes a lot of those other problems and makes them look quite small.
Well, let's go back farther to Florida with Steve Spurrier. The word on Steve Spurrier when he was an assistant coach at Georgia Tech, well, he doesn't recruit hard enough. Bill Curry didn't keep him on his staff when he took the head coaching job there. When you can coach as well as he can, you don't have to recruit as well. Just a brilliant coach, a brilliant offensive coach, and gave a defensive coordinator. He hired his defensive coaches, and he didn't meddle with them. He said, hey, it's your deal. You take over. Okay, he did that for Bob Stoops, and Bob Stoops became a very successful coach at Oklahoma. You can't focus on negatives. You have a problem when you start focusing on negatives, particularly when there's a big picture to look at, as in the case with Dan Mullen. You can say, well, he doesn't do this. I don't know about his recruiting. Yeah, but look at the record. That's how we evaluate coaches. Look at the record. He has to be doing something right. And he didn't just do it for a couple of years. He sustained success there. And I think if he would have stayed there, I think he would have kept doing the same thing. He has the ability to motivate players as Spurrier did, I think. I think players are really motivated by a coach. And I'm talking to the offensive players. When they see a coach that can look at what a defense is doing and tells you, here's what we need to do now. Here's how we'll combat that. And it works. They really go to school on that. That gives them tremendous confidence in the coach. He takes a specific case and he makes you better. And I think Dan Mullen can do that. And so Tennessee missed out. But Dave Hart, I wonder if he even considered Dan Mullen. Butch Jones was kind of a car salesman. I don't mean that in a derogatory way. He sold himself. He's very upbeat, very positive, very assured of what he could do. I think that's what won Dave Hart over. And there were probably some other schools that would have hired Butch Jones back then. I think he turned down Colorado. So it's not like he was just some dud. The people that present themselves the best don't always turn out to be the best coaches. Not just true in coaching, it's true in anything. I always try to downplay interviews when hiring people. When I don't hire people anymore, but when I did, I mean, I want a track record and I want to know what other people that have been around this guy, what they think.
We'll be right back.
Hey, football fans, the best way to unwind and chill out during these busy go, go, go days is to reach for the one beer that's literally made to chill, and that, of course, is Coors Light. Hey, it's Adam for Coors Light. It's important to relax these days, so crack open a Mountain Cold Coors Light and chill out. Now that we're getting towards the critical parts of the college football season, it's important to make sure your refrigerator is stocked with cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged Coors Light. In fact, the mountains on the can will turn blue when chilled to perfection, so when you want to hit the reset button, reach for the beer that's made to chill, Coors Light. You can even have Coors Light delivered by going to get.coorslight.com. As the games get hotter and hotter, reach for the one beer that's made to chill, Coors Light. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John, we've talked a lot about Dan Mullen versus Jeremy Pruitt and how that 2017 coaching search panned out for Tennessee and also reflected back on the 13, but or excuse me, the 2012 search that in which Tennessee hired Butch Jones before the 2013 season. But I want to take a look at this rivalry game as a whole for a little bit, because, you know, we mentioned at the top about how, you know, this is still has that phrase in front of it, rivalry game, but it sure hasn't felt really all that much like a rivalry game these last few years. I wonder where you think Tennessee ranks right now for Florida on its list of rivals. I mean, if you were to ask, you know, your average Florida fan, or, you know, if even if you were to get Dan Mullen to tell you on that, where do you think Tennessee falls right now in Florida's rival pecking order? Because I still think for Tennessee, Florida's probably there at number two, even though this rivalry is kind of in a diminished and dormant state right now. I don't know that anybody has really leaped past Florida for Tennessee, but where do you think Tennessee would rank on Florida's list?
Well, obviously Georgia's Florida's number one rival now. That's who it'd be. It had to beat Georgia to win the SEC East. It pulled that off. That's clearly its biggest game of the year. Normally you would say Florida State, but Florida State is in much disarray, as is Tennessee. It's as though Florida's beaten its rivals into submission, and they're just kind of, we give up. And eventually maybe Florida State will come back and that'll be a rivalry game, but it's really not right now. I think LSU is second, because you go back to rivalries come and go. It's not so much the way it used to be, I think. If you're trying to win championships and trying to win a division championship. But I go back to that LSU game. When LSU last year had one of the best teams in the history of college football, and Florida was very competitive against it. You know, it was about to score and make it a one-touchdown game and had a turnover there. But I think that's the game that Florida's pointed to. And keep in mind that those are natural rivals. So they play every year like Tennessee and Alabama. It's not really good for either one of them when you think about it, if you're trying to win a championship, because both programs can be pretty good. But I think those two. And here's another one. Kentucky right now might mean more to Florida. There's just been some real bad blood in that series of late. Last year, Kentucky knocked Felipe Franks, Florida's starting quarterback, out of the game. That opened the door for Kyle Trask to go on this Heisman Trophy charge. But Felipe Franks was a quarterback. Kentucky knocked him out of the game, and Florida players thought it was a cheap shot. And there have been some other issues and some close games recently. And so I really think I've talked to Florida writers who said, yeah, that's a – they were really pointing to – Florida was pointing toward that game this year.
I think I would probably put Tennessee fourth, maybe. I agree with you. It starts with Georgia, I think, right now for Florida. Uh-huh. Then I would look at LSU. And then despite where Florida State's program is, which is not in a good place, I would still put Florida State 3 because it wasn't that long ago that Florida State was in a much better place and rattled off 5 wins in a row over Florida. From 2013 to 2017, Florida State won 5 in a row in that series. And so it has been a thorn in the side of Florida much more recently than what Tennessee has. Plus you have the in-state factor and the proximity of the schools, you know, are only a few hours apart. So I would put Florida State still 3, I think. And then, you know, I guess I could see it going either way. I'd probably put Tennessee ahead of Kentucky maybe still, but I think you could make a pretty good argument like you did there for Kentucky being ahead of Tennessee. But yeah, I think at best for Tennessee is Florida's number 4 rival right now. And once you get down to that stage, it's really hard to for Tennessee. I still think Florida's number 2. I think, you know, if you're a fan 35 years old or younger, you might say Florida's number 1. If you're a fan older than that, certainly 50s or older, I think most of those fans would still point to Alabama.
Sure.
But do you think Florida's 2, or would you say Vanderbilt has climbed into conversation? Georgia doesn't really feel like a rivalry for Tennessee right now. It doesn't really feel like there's much there because Tennessee's not threatening Georgia.
I think Kentucky might be Tennessee's best rival right now.
It's a good point.
Tennessee beat a couple of good Kentucky teams by Kentucky standards, and then Kentucky came back and blew out Tennessee this year. So that's a very good point. I think one other thing I want to mention about Dan Mullen, and we don't know where that program's headed. It appears to be headed to the very highest level. I was talking to someone very familiar with Mississippi State football. I guess it was before last season. And he said, yeah, Dan Mullen will do a good job at Florida. And he knew him from being at Mississippi State. But I think there's a ceiling with Dan Mullen. You know, he'll win 10 games, but that, you know, that's, he's just that kind of coach, and that's as high as he'll go. And so what did he do last year? He won 11. And I respect this person's opinion. I just think for some reason people keep underestimating this guy. I'm not sure why. Maybe it is that kind of that off-center personality. But, I mean, he's won 10, 11. And, I mean, he could play for the national championship. That's still on the table.
It obviously didn't take him long to turn Florida into a top 10 program after inheriting that 4-7 team. Someone asked me this week, John, I'd be curious your take on this. Are Tennessee's days of being a top, let's say a top 10 program, you know, in the 90s, I think you could say that Tennessee was a top 10 program in the 90s, certainly. Are their days as a top 10 program over and never coming back? Or do you think Tennessee is a Dan Mullen hire, a Dan Mullen type hire, hiring someone from that of that caliber away from being able to be a top 10 program again?
The latter. I think if Tennessee got Dan Mullen and now in his third year, I think Tennessee would be knocking on the top 10 door. He had more talent at Florida than Jeremy Pruitt did at Tennessee. If you'd have given Dan Mullen Tennessee's talent, I guarantee you'd have a better quarterback now. He would have either made Jared Garantano into a better quarterback or he would have found a quarterback. He's been really good at quarterbacks, not just developing them, but putting them in a system and using them in a way that enhances their talents. He's done that with every quarterback he's ever had. Has a really good track record there. So, no, I don't say – I think Tennessee's chances of ever having a 1990s run, I don't see that ever happening. But I do think if you get a coach that can make them 9-3, which made him 8-4, you get a coach that make them 9-3, and then you sign a Cam Newton type. If you get to that 9-3 level, and then you get this one superstar, you get a Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, one of those kind of guys, then you can still do it. So I wouldn't give up. But here's the problem. And then we've talked this to death already, but Tennessee hasn't been able to get the right coaches. I mean, some of the coaches turned him down. Mike Gundy doesn't want this job. He feels as though he's better off at Oklahoma State than he is at Tennessee. I think that speaks volumes. He'd rather be at Oklahoma State than Tennessee. He's in Oklahoma. He's in Boomer Sooner country. He's in Oklahoma shadow. He's in the same conference with Texas. Baylor's an up-and-coming program. Those three programs would seemingly would be better. But he'd rather be there than take over Tennessee. Now, that tells me something. Tennessee hadn't been able to get that kind of coach, and that's why I really believe Tennessee should fire Jeremy Pruitt and hire Hugh Freeze. I think Hugh Freeze can take them to a different level. He's got a good track record, too, but I don't know if Tennessee will pull the trigger on that.
John, we haven't talked too much about the actual matchup between Tennessee and Florida, and there's probably a reason we haven't talked too much about that, because there's really not much to say. It's hard to see this being anything other than a lopsided result in favor of the Gators. But I do want to touch briefly as we close here on Florida quarterback Kyle Trask. You and I are both voters for the Heisman Trophy, which is not as much of a prestigious honor in getting a vote for the Heisman, as you might think. A lot of people get votes for the Heisman Trophy. Oh, it's
900 people, I think.
Yeah, it's not a real exclusive list. But you and I have Heisman votes, and the Heisman folks, of course, they really don't want you previewing your Heisman ballot. So this is not a preview of our Heisman ballot by any means, John. This is merely a hypothetical discussion. But if this were to be your Heisman ballot, John, where would Kyle Trask rank? I mean, do you think he's a front runner right now for the Heisman? Do you think he's the front runner for your first place vote? Because for me, I'd have a hard time looking past him. I mean, Mac Jones is obviously making his case as well as a few others, but I'd have a hard time looking past Trask and what he's done.
I've actually gone back and forth between Kyle Trask and Mac Jones. I think Mac Jones has a stronger arm. Kyle Trask, though, is very accurate, hardly ever forces anything, and just knows where everybody is on the field. Reminds me a whole lot of Danny Werfel back in the 1990s, another Florida Heisman Trophy winner, strictly drop-back passer, never ran. Kyle will run sometimes, not very well. I mean, he's not graceful at it. He'll make you a few yards up. So yeah, and I really like Mac Jones too. They would be 1-2, and I stick a Najee Harris, Alabama's running back, in there. I just think he is a tremendous player. He's another Derrick Henry, and I know his stats don't compare to these quarterbacks, but I just kind of want to give him his due. I think he deserves it. Honestly, when I look at SEC quarterbacks, Matt Corral might be the most physically talented quarterback in the league. Ole Miss's quarterbacks. He does some Patrick Mahomes-type throws. He's got a powerful arm, a quick release, can be very accurate. But the difference in him and in Mac Jones and Kyle Trask is decision-making. They just don't force the ball. He forces a ball. He makes plays he shouldn't. He threw 6 interceptions in the Kentucky game. It was just an awful game, and everybody has a bad game. He had a cataclysmically bad game. But in terms of arm talent, to me, he's a top-10 NFL draft pick.
What's interesting, John, is Kyle Trask might very well win the Heisman, and I think Kyle Pitts has an argument for perhaps being college football's truly most talented player. I mean, I think in terms of talent, in terms of what he might bring to the NFL level, I mean, Kyle Pitts is an absolute monster, and he's a nightmare in the red zone. Yeah, Tennessee's not going to have anybody that can match up against him. I mean, you think Tennessee's struggled up to this point covering the middle of the field?
I hate to see it happen, because it happened in the Georgia game, but some of those Tennessee DBs might look at it as he's worth the targeting call and an ejection. I mean, they can't cover him, certainly not with one guy. And I actually had him third on my Heisman. We vote weekly in our Gannett poll, and I had him third. And then he got hurt, and he went out. But and he had one off game. But you look at the total package, coaches are prone to hyperbole, and Jeremy Pruitt was saying this week that he's like maybe the best player we've ever played against. You can make a really strong case for that because you've got a 6'6 guy with about the tiniest waist I've ever seen who can jump, and he looks like he's about 8 feet and a half high when he goes up to get a ball. And then you look at his hands. He's got the softest hands. He never traps the ball against his chest. It's always with the hands. So he's got that. And then you watch the way he runs his routes. He makes these sharp, very definitive cuts. For a guy that size to have that kind of footwork, he's really not a tight end. That's in name only. He's a wide receiver. He'll be a wide receiver in the NFL, and nobody will want to cover that guy. He's a nightmare for Tennessee.
All right, John, it's going to be quite the challenge for the Vols on Saturday. We'll see how it plays out and be back to discuss more next week. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.